Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, it's that time of the year, and I just, back in January, it was so great to see you, Joe. Joe Lenardi joins us. Joe, welcome back to the show, and let's get into your wheelhouse. Great to hear from you.
Steve, thank you. Without you and Dick, I think I'd still be wandering around University City and, you know, trying to find my way into the Palestra, which, you know, when I was an undergrad, we would just usually lift each other up and climb through a window.
Oh, see, that was always the running joke about Rec Hall. Nobody ever really knew what the attendance was because everybody knew doors they could get in. Not today.
And I can't confirm this, but I thought someone told me years ago when I was coming up there, the games at Rec Hall in your Atlantic 10 days, that it was the same architect as
it
the Palestra.
It is. Exact same guy.
Because, I mean, it sure looks it.
Oh, it's one's blue, one's red. And it's really kind of cool it's like that. So,
how about that?
Two great buildings. Joe, I'm of the opinion, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but that UConn, Houston, Purdue as ones, but there's a big distance as to who is the fourth number one seed. Am I on the right track?
Yes, I think those three have separated, and I could make legitimate, very winning sounding arguments for all three of them as number one overall. And I suspect we'll waste a lot of hot air and digital memory over the next 3 weeks debating that, unless or until someone separates. But the reality and the practical application of it this year is we know where all those three teams are going, whatever their order is. So moving on to the rest of your question, yes, there is a gap. Arizona in the fourth overall spot, which would be the last number one seed. Arizona is actually closer to the two teams right behind them, Carolina and Tennessee, than they are to the top three. Arizona plays tonight at Arizona State, its last game there with them as Pac-12 members.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could lose. Tennessee could win big against Auburn tonight. And maybe tomorrow morning we'll wake up and we'll have a new number one seed. Yeah. But that's the scenario at this point at the top of the bracket.
That's why I look at the conference tournaments, and a conference tournament champion, if it happens to be in that grouping, might be the separator that does it. I mean, we'll see.
To the extent that, you know, this committee or any recent ones actually pay that much attention to conference tournaments, because, you know, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence to suggest, particularly, you know, in your league with that late Sunday game on Selection Day, that, you know, it's not always the most valuable chip to get when it comes to your eventual placement in the bracket.
Oh, no, when it comes to the Big Ten, no. Okay, the Big Ten.
We've seen it over and over.
Right. I mean, they've got it on in the background. That's about the extent of the importance of it to the committee. It's on TV.
And,
is it over yet?
I'm not going to name names, but I know committee members in years past who've already been on a plane back to their campuses while the Big Ten championship game is underway and the selection show hasn't even come on yet. Right. And I'm not faulting them. They all have jobs,
right?
And important jobs. But you know, it does kind of make me wonder sometimes where those of us who do brackets, you know, we're sitting there grinding away with a pencil and an eraser at 5:25 on Selection Sunday night when, you know, maybe we should be having a bourbon.
I like the latter suggestion, by the way. All right. So.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't know personally because, you know, I subscribe to the theory that, that too much of any brown liquor will stunt your growth. So I, you know, I would know nothing really at all about it.
Okay. That's an inside joke between the two of us.
Well,
because a lot of people don't see you. They see you on TV sitting, so that's why.
Well, how about we just leave it at this? I'm taller on TV because of the camera.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so we'll always ask about...
You could have had any guests today. You didn't have to get the silly one.
I got the one I have a lot of fun with. How about that?
There you go.
Okay, so always going to be asked about last four in, out. So at this hour, since nobody's playing at this hour, who's last
right.
four and who's first and who's first four begging to get in?
Yeah. At the moment, and we do have a new bracket up today, so I should probably follow that. last four in order: New Mexico, Providence, Virginia, Gonzaga. Mm. Providence, Virginia, both playing tonight on the road. And then first four out: Villanova, Colorado, Texas A&M, and Utah. Colorado and A&M both playing tonight, both at home.
Virginia is an interesting case.
Yeah.
You know, they've been going along,
you know,
and they can't score.
Boy, when they're good, they're really good, but if they make it in, I'm certainly not going to circle them many times on my bracket.
No.
For the very reason that you're pointing out, and you know, that game last, I guess, was it Saturday or Sunday? You know, they're in. I was reminded, wasn't it a Virginia North Carolina game back in the 80s in the ACC final? Dean Smith scored a score against Ralph Sampson that led to the shot clock directly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Went
I mean,
corners.
I was a child, but I seem to remember that.
And I was not. Oh, I mean, yeah, it did. He went four corners. Everybody's like, well, we can't watch this.
That was like, you know, 33-32 or something.
Well, that's okay. With a shot clock at a three-point line, Penn State in the Big Ten quarterfinals in 2011, I think this is the game that got him in eventually, beat Wisconsin 36-33. And Dick Girardi had the great line in the postgame. Hey, Steve, when does the second half start?
That sounds just like him. Well, you know, we've all covered teams like, you know, we'd take a team three halves to get to 80.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, you know, one of these years we're going to get Virginia, Wisconsin in a tournament game.
Oh,
and,
football on wood.
You know, CBS might decide they want to have bowling on.
That just screams true TV. All right. So.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Or false TV.
Oh, yeah. So how many could the Big Ten get when it's all said and done, in your opinion?
I think the six that are in are varying degrees of solid. The second trio of the six, Nebraska, Michigan State, Northwestern, are all kind of in that 8, 9, maybe 10 range.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that 8s and 9s don't fall out of the field at this point. They do. but you got to try. And so, you know, that then leaves the discussion and turns it to Iowa, which, you know, had a nice win last night.
I noticed.
and I have them next four out at 75th overall. Gotcha. I don't think they'll ultimately make it because I don't think they're good enough.
Right.
And on paper, 2-8 in quad one isn't going to get it done, but there's certainly opportunity for them to get a winning streak here and play their way up and in. But there has never been, there's a significant gap between the last four in and the first four out.
Yep.
And then another significant gap before the next four out. The gaps the size of which, A, I've not remember seeing, and B, that they fall exactly on the foursomes. It's almost like, you know, they're getting paired up for a shotgun starting golf.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're going to put these four on the 12th hole and these four on the 10th hole, and these other four are so different, you're going to play the short course.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You're going to be over at the par 3 course, have a good time.
That's where I'll be.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's like, see, that's the Girardi game. He loves wedge putting. Doesn't bring a driver.
He should stick to that. And should I too? But I'm just, you know, I'm still delusional enough to think I might get better.
Well, and here is, aren't we all? We always get that par on 18. Go, hey, I think I'll come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
But here is the part, for example, for you talk about Iowa. If it continues on the path they're on, they'd be an 8 seed. Well, that means they get Purdue if they win. And I think that stalls what you're talking about. That's the problem they're going to have moving forward. It would be an opportunity, but an opportunity would be a long shot.
Also an opportunity, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly wouldn't bet a mortgage payment on Iowa in that game,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless it was your mortgage payment.
Well, of course you would. That's one thing I've always admired about you. When it came to anything I had, you were always willing to bet it. I always felt that was a solid strategy.
Well, I just, you know, we all have our fathers to a degree on our shoulders here.
Yeah.
And mine always said, you know, Joseph, that's why they call it gambling.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I'd be like, okay, Dad. Yeah. He also told me I had a face for radio, so,
That's a meme. That was a given in my house. And somehow I've made a living out of it. Who knows?
He was gone long before all this TV stuff. God only knows what he would say.
I know.
Actually, I do know. He'd say, his mother and I can't believe they're paying him to talk.
Well, you do it well. The ACC thing obviously came up. It's like I had a...
Yep.
With all due respect, I had a laugh out of it. Okay. Part of it is knowing you and knowing what you put into it. And it's like, okay. But how many...
What did I say exactly? Like, I'm still trying to figure that out.
You didn't say anything, okay? You literally just gave an analysis that at this hour what you thought. It didn't mean it didn't change. Right?
And now apparently, like, I've spoken ill of their recruiting and I should stay in my lane and blah, blah, blah. I think I was simply asked, you know, having pointed out the pretty significant drop-off in seeding for ACC teams in recent years, I was asked what I thought caused that. And I think I said they probably don't have the same number of really good players.
Yeah.
Okay.
But all
they can
you
recruit
do...
whoever they want. But, like, look, whenever these things happen, I generally, like, I should just be quiet, keep my powder dry, and wait for Selection Sunday because it all kind of comes out in the wash. But the reality is the number of people non-publicly coming after me with ACC affiliations, and again, not naming names, makes me want to go on the air and say, stop whining. And I do have a breaking point, and it might be soon.
And I understand.
Because they are whining.
Right, but what people don't
understand...
They're not
as good at basketball.
Right.
Like, it's not a perception problem. It's a basketball problem. When you average more than one number one seed for two decades,
yeah,
and then go 5 years without one, when your best seed in the tournament in two of the last 3 years is only a four, that's not perception. That's not gaming the net. This is not like the single bullet theory in the grassy knoll.
Right.
That's performance at basketball, right, period.
But you're not sitting there and putting a conference against a conference. You're comparing
you're comparing
Virginia and what they've done to this hour versus Utah and what they've done to this hour. It has nothing to do with what conference they're in. It depends it's about the opponents that they play along the way, and of course the vast majority are conference opponents in the Pac-12 and the vast majority are ACC opponents. I got that part. But that's what it comes down to. What's the overall body of work? And it just turns out that there aren't as many ACC teams' body of work that's good enough to get home.
Yeah, and I mean, look, sometimes expansion is a good thing. The Big 12 has added the number one team in the country.
Yeah.
Okay? The ACC has too many non-factors now, and it's not about to get better.
No.
With SMU, Stanford, and Cal. I don't know who thought that was a good idea, but I guarantee it wasn't a basketball person.
No, exactly right. Now, the Big 12.
And, you know, for those who can't, it is not a conference debate in the committee room, but, you know, because we live in the real world of fans who like to put their chest out about their teams and their leagues. I get it. But, like, the last team in the field right now from the Big 12, they're ninth.
Yep.
Is Texas, which was winning by like 30 at a 7 seed last night.
Yep.
The last team in the field from the ACC, their fifth, is Virginia, who we talked about. Now, if Virginia and Texas played today on a neutral court, what do you think the boys in Vegas would say?
Right. Exactly.
Like, I'm just the messenger.
Right.
And I know this sounds incredibly arrogant, and I don't mean to be. I'm also not wrong.
Right. You have a track record.
Well, I mean, there is that.
Yeah. You have a track record, but there's another element to it as well. Everyone has to understand, like, you put out the new bracket today. These are your snapshots at the hour. They are not the final product. Everything is a work in progress, right, which you understand. But there's a lot of people that don't understand that.
And, I mean, look, I think it's cyclical, but if I were, you know, a data scientist for the ACC, and I'm neither, I know it seems, you know, kind of counterintuitive, not a data expert, and I'm definitely not a scientist, but, like, the ACC's numbers over a multi-year period are good.
Right.
They just aren't.
Right.
And yeah, I think what set some people off was, you know, like 5 or 6 years ago, whenever it was, their player of the year was Zion Williamson, the number one pick in the draft.
Yep.
Last year, it was Isaiah Wong, who's a nice player.
Yep.
I saw him play in high school at Monsignor Bonner, like 3 miles from my house.
So I'm playing the Jordan Center against Penn State.
Right. But, like, no, he's not the number one pick in the draft.
No.
He's not even close. So, like, you know, if we're going from a, you know, a Michael Jordan, Zion Williamson continuum to Isaiah Wong, Armando Bacot, it's not as good. It just isn't.
Well, let me give you, we'll close this out here. I mean, I agree with you. But I'll close out with this analogy. I think there are fans of the ACC and even coaches of the ACC that think it's 2005, 95, 85.
Yeah.
That's the same attitude that I see from Indiana basketball fans in the Big Ten that they can't accept it's 2024 and it's not 1987 any longer. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I never realized, you know, that there was so much of a sense of entitlement, to be honest. You know, because I'm from, you know, little old St. Joe's, and we don't think that way. But just, we don't think that way. And, you know, I'm studying this year, the here and now, right at this moment, and applying how the committee has acted in the past.
Exactly.
Nothing more, nothing less. Or as I often used to say, I put my own mother in the NIT if she played a crappy sketch.
And with that line, it's the mic drop.
I got nothing better.
I will let you fade for the moment into the sunset, my friend.
Please do, because I'm sure this is going to go viral. Oh. And, you know, I'm going to be selling apples on the art museum steps by April 1st.
My friend, always, as you know, a pleasure, whether we're doing talking this or just talking in person. Thanks so much. I appreciate you, Joe.
Right.
See you,
have
man.
A good run.
Thanks.
See ya.
Joe Lunardi, the best. That was a fun conversation across the board. I hope you learned a lot. You want to talk about somebody that knows their business? Joe knows his business. And with that, he's an even better guy. All right. More coming up on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And, all right, so let's get to last night's game, because Joe Lunardi and I just brought up Iowa, and we'll have Sweeney Murdy on at 2:05. So let's get to last night's game. There's no doubt who the engine of this team is. I think you can draw a lot of parallels between Ace Baldwin in the first month and a half to 2 months of the season and the first month and a half to 2 months of the season of Jalen Pickett when he was a junior. And then as time went, Pickett got better and better and better, and by the time you get to the Big Ten tournament, you're like, whoa, they got a player here. That's what we're seeing with Ace. There's no question that Ace is the engine. Okay. For whatever reason, whether it was what Iowa was doing, and they should get credit for what they were doing, it didn't seem, sitting courtside, that Ace came out of the gate with a ton of juice last night. Right? And this team needs Ace and juice together, which they've been getting. And with that, Iowa built a 17-point lead early in the game. Now it becomes, on the road, this dramatic uphill climb. And Dick and I made the point on the broadcast about how important it was to at least get it to single digits by halftime, because at least now you put yourself into a workable situation. It's like having second down and 18, and you're able to hit a play, and now it's going to be third down and 7. Now you feel like you've got at least a workable right? And being down single digits at halftime, at least makes it feel like it's workable. Well, in the second half, Mike made some adjustments, and Ace came out with great energy as he and Hicks scored right away out of the gate. Then Ace scored again. Penn State's now putting game pressure on. But this game was so weird last night. We get to the under 16 timeout in the game. And I looked over at Dick in the commercial break, and I said, have you ever seen this before? And I'll tell you exactly what it was. And Dick said, no, I haven't. I said, well, I know I haven't. I've never seen a game where it got to the under 16 to start the second half. So we're only 4 minutes and 10 seconds into the second half. And Penn State already had 17 fouls and Iowa had none. Like, the two of us are like, what the heck? I'm not saying Penn State's not committing fouls, but you're telling me that group over there is playing pristine defense? Really? Like, okay. I must be missing something. Penn State gets the game to 2. Now they put all this game pressure on Iowa. It's a 51-49 game. So they go from 17 down to 2. The building is quiet. They're kind of taken aback. And then something happened that was as bizarre as I've seen. Now, it's not like I've never seen it before, because I saw it, I can distinctly remember one other time, a coach yelling out to his own players and getting teed up because the official thought he was yelling at them. But Ace Baldwin's looking to the sideline, and like not saying, he's staring over, right? And the official's like near there, and I think he thought he was staring him down, I think he was saying something to Mike, whatever. And he got teed up. He got teed up. What are you doing? I'm not talking about Ace. By all accounts I have, Ace, I mean, and it happened like 20 feet from me. That's like, Ace is looking over. That's why he kept holding his hands up to the bench. I'm talking to the bench. I'm looking at the bench. And he was told he was staring. Staring. I think he thought he was staring at him. So he teed him up. Like, what are you doing? Let's preface this by this, just so everybody knows. Every game is different. They all take on their own personalities. And I say that all the time, as you know. At 51-49, I don't know if at that point the final score could have been exactly the same. Iowa could have won at 90-81. Or Penn State gets a live ball turnover, gets the tie, or it takes a three, takes the lead, or gets the rebound, comes down the floor, ties the game, or takes the lead. Now the game pressure's on Iowa. Now for the first time all night, they've got to make a play to get back in front. And you don't know how it's going to play out. I mean, it could have played out exactly the same, 90-81. Iowa wins it. Or maybe some things happen that are different. Could be Iowa winning by 2-5. Or it could be Penn State winning by 2-5. You don't know at that point. And to make that call, and again, Mike already had a T in the first half from the same official, and it was Kip Kissinger was the one that called it last night. I know people say DJ did. No, it was Kip Kissinger on both T's last night. Now, I don't know what Mike said. I don't. I'll ask Mike tomorrow at practice. We won't get into it on the show. There's no need to. All right. But it's because Mike was in front of us. And so I couldn't hear what, you know, it was a call that DJ made when Nick Kern drove the baseline. And it looked like there was a lot of contact and he went down. And, you know, at least my perception from calling it was that that, in my opinion, was not the right call, and Mike didn't think it was the right call. I will say this. There was a play in the second half where they made a call, and I thought it was a foul, and they didn't call it, and we looked at the replay. It was not a foul. It was actually the right call. So it's like, you know, look, we make mistakes too when we see something, but not on that play. But that's just the way it goes. Unfortunately, that's the way it played out. But this call changes the game. Penn State's got momentum. Iowa's on its heels. The crowd is flat. Iowa's unsure of itself. Penn State's becoming exponentially more sure of itself on a night, by the way, where Zach Hicks has finally had a night where he's not shooting well. He's been shooting well for a month. DeMarco Dunn is like, okay, you know, and he'd been pretty good for them. You know, they couldn't get some production out of a couple sources that have been reliable for them of late. Okay. You know, Jameel Brown couldn't hit any shots. So you're not getting that. You're getting a reverse of what we saw with Indiana on Saturday at the Jordan Center. Indiana made 5 more baskets than Penn State. But Penn State hit enough threes, enough free throws, won those two, I think, what was it, like 47-20? Something like that? The two lines? And last night it was the opposite. Iowa won the two lines like 57-21, 22, something like that. And Penn State made 7 more baskets than Iowa. But it's very difficult today. You have to hit twos, there's no doubt, but it's hard to win the game 2 by 2. You have to have enough threes. Like, you have to make between, in today's game, between 7 and 12 threes to put yourself in the ball game. It's hard to win 2 by 2. Okay? And Iowa, which has been a 3-point shooting team, which is a surprise because that's not normally them, but this season it's been them, hit, I think, 7 of them last night, something like that. And of course, the free throw line over and over again. But that technical foul on Ace changed the whole tenor of the second half. Penn State's the team on the charge, on the go, playing great, excited. Iowa's on its heels, unsure of itself, crowd flat. Like, okay, here comes the time. And he makes that call. And it's the wrong call. I mean, it's not even incorrect. It is, I'm using the proper word, it's the wrong call. And what happened was Iowa already had the ball, so that wasn't the issue here. But it's 2 free throws. Well, they hit the 2 free throws, so for the moment it steadies the ship. It takes 2 to get it to 4, then Iowa scored right after that. Now it's 6. It's a 4-point trip. I talk all the time about the importance of something that is invisible. I'm not talking about the suit lurking around the station. That's a different thing. That's called a horror movie. But it's called, quote, feel for the game. And as I mentioned, if you're in analytics, you hate that term, but it's real. It's real. Some people have a natural instinct for the game. A coach. I've seen coaches that don't have a feel for the game, and I've seen coaches that do. Okay? Like, yeah, you know, when to call a timeout, when not to call a timeout, you know, when to dial up a certain play, a certain set, whatever. Okay, that feel for the game. I see it in announcers, feel for the game. You can tell who's really got a feel for it, understands it, sees the whole picture wide. You know, Dick Girardi's feel for the game, Jack Ham's feel for the game, unparalleled. Right? And then I can tell those who are a little bit robotic, stick to the script, right? Don't really have a feel for situations, time, score, how it should be done. You know what I mean? You can see it. I'll tell you when you really see it on ESPN is you see it during bowl time because they have to go deep into the bench to bowl games, and you see it during championship week. You can see the difference between those, like the, you know, the Dan Shulmans and, you know, and the Iron Eagles and the Mike Breens. I mean, their feel for the game is just unparalleled. And then you got, you know, other guys that they're working, but it's a little more robotic. Well, it's the same thing with officiating and players, of course, feel for the game versus great athlete who just like is a great athlete, right? Then you see that in officials. There are some officials that have a great feel for the game. It gets a little heated. They have the ability to go, hey, look, everybody just cool down here. Let's just 1 second. Or if something comes up, they'll go over, they'll talk to the coach. They have a feel for the moment, the time, the score, the situation, everything. And then you have guys that have no feel for it whatsoever. And last night, that was a moment where I could look out and say, you know what? You have no feel for the moment, time, score, situation, or what this guy's doing. No feel for it. None. Zero. If he doesn't like me saying it, fine. But guess what? A guy can't look at his own bench? Really? And you're telling me that is a teeable offense? I think he thought he was staring him down. Like, who cares if he's staring you down? Just officiate the game. Hey, look, does Ace have the ability at times to kind of push the envelope a little bit in that area? Yeah, but not there. He didn't do anything. Now, am I saying he determined the outcome of the game? I'm not saying that. But he derailed Penn State's momentum at that point. He allowed Iowa to catch its breath with the call. How the game would have turned out had he not played could have turned out exactly the same. I can't tell you whether it would be the same, different, anything. Okay? Can't. You know, and that, to me, that's fair.
Steve, we had a caller who called in and wanted to know what your thoughts were on maybe what Penn State's postseason outlook was, and do they have any shot at a tournament bid?
Well, I mean, the NITs right now, for the NCAA, you have to win the tournament.
Yeah.
For the NIT, the key is, look, I think part of it is you got to win on Saturday, and then you got to beat Maryland, and then win at least a game in the Big Ten tournament to get yourself in a spot where maybe you're in the neighborhood of being one of the, you know, of being A over 500 overall, 500 or better. Now, the NIT, you can be below 500 and get in because you can get an automatic bid by being one of the top two in the net that don't make the NCAA tournament. Now, Penn State's not in that spot right now. But you could be a team that is, I don't know, let's just say 15. Let's say you lose your opening round game. So you're 15 and 17. And you get to the NIT because you happen to have one of the top two nets of the remaining teams that didn't make the NCAAs, you'd get the bid. So you just have to take care of your next, because you're going to go on the road. That's going to be a game where you win, you're going to climb in the net. And also you're trying to avoid playing Wednesday, which I call Peacock Night. Gary Dolphin almost fell down when I said that. He's the Iowa play-by-play guy. He almost fell down when I said to him last night. I said, the key is to avoid Peacock Night. Because they have the opening night of the tournament. And Bobby Hansen was like, oh, God. He says, I wish I'd said that. but that's, you know, that's where you are at this stage. You're a game under 500. I haven't looked at the net today. It's got to be right around between 95 and 100, I would think, somewhere in that neighborhood. But that's what you have to do, and it really starts with what you do Saturday. Now, Minnesota will play tonight. They play at Illinois. They're coming off a game where Minnesota, where they lost to Nebraska, didn't look good. But you know what, Todd? I just saw Nebraska in person 10 days ago. And I think the Nebraska's shutdown of Minnesota in the last game was far more a product of what Nebraska's doing than Minnesota. Nebraska, at home especially, is really a good defensive team. They really are. So we'll see how they play tonight at Illinois. They're going to be able to score tonight. The question is going to be whether they can slow down Illinois enough. Because Illinois, goes into every game thinking that it's not just cracking 80. They don't want to crack 85. That's what they do. They want to get 85 points or better. Not just 80, 85 or better.
I got a chance to see. I watched some of the Nebraska Penn State game the other Saturday, and I think it was Wisconsin. I saw them play at Nebraska when Wisconsin was still playing, really well, and they are pretty. They are an impressive team.
Wisconsin was up 18 in that game.
Yeah,
and Nebraska came all the way back and beat them in overtime. And they came back and beat them in overtime because in the second half they clamped down Wisconsin with their defense. So, all right, we'll take a break and talk some baseball in the next half hour. Maybe we got to do a show where fans call in with their best suit stories. Ones that avoid, legal trouble. What? No? Bad? Not a good idea?
Kind of boring if they avoid the legal trouble.
Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Hey, great to have you with us on the show today. Sweeney Murdy coming up in the next half hour. We'll talk about Major League Baseball. Spring training games are underway. Keep getting updates. Nobody knows who any of these players are. Not even the organizations. Who is this guy? I don't know. We're gonna send him someplace else.
You have to have a deep prospect knowledge of your favorite team to follow along with some of these early spring training games.
Well, you know what? When they had multiple layers of minor leagues before they took that stupid Houston Astros suggestion and Manfred cut all these minor league teams out, 40 of them, people were in touch. You're in Williamsport. Hey, Reese Hoskins. You're in Williamsport. Hey, Alec Bohm. Hey, you're in Williamsport. You keep going through these guys. Freddie Galvis, who'd been their shortstop. And they would follow them through the minors. They had the greatest single small market marketing tool on the face of the earth, and some bean counter goes out and says, we could save $1 million a team. $1 million a team. I thought you told me you were attended $11 billion industry. Who cares about saving $1 million a team? That's like $1 million worth of marketing in 40 markets of people who are following players to your team. Who thinks of this stuff? That's why you make a great point, and it's become less because you've taken 40 markets, you've given them the finger. That's what you've done.
Yeah.
Where they would, those Williamsport fans would follow these guys all the way up through. I don't care if they're in Redding or the Lehigh Valley or Lakewood or whatever it is. Right? They'd follow them. Nope, not anymore.